What's up, y'all? Will here at Schedulefly. This is Natalie Grindstaff, Director of Restaurants at Crafted Hospitality in New York City, in the fourth and final episode of our series with the folks at Crafted. What a great organization. What a fun group of people to chat with. And it was really cool having, you know, four different roles of leadership within the organization and speaking with each of these folks about their perspectives on hospitality and on Crafted Hospitality specifically, and working for Tom Colicchio, and what's going on in New York. And it's just a really cool series. It's actually given me the idea that we need to start doing more of these series. In fact, I've approached a couple of restaurant groups in other parts of the country to do something similar, because I think this is great. So thank you, Greg, very much for putting this together and making this so easy for me. We did these all four in one day, sort of back to back to back. So appreciate that. But Natalie's awesome and so much fun to talk to. I would have talked to her a lot longer. Really easy to talk to, really loves what she does. Just a cool personality. And I would have spoken to her a lot longer, but I know she's busy. And I think I had committed maybe 30 minutes for everybody. And I think we talked for maybe close to 45. So just thoroughly enjoyed speaking with her. And you know, I look forward to meeting Natalie and all the folks here at Crafted next time I get to New York. I was supposed to be there in person for these. Had a family issue that prevented me from going, but, well, you'll see why. I look forward to meeting these folks when you listen to this episode and the others in this series. So, without further ado, actually, before we get to Natalie, a word from our awesome sponsor, Pop Menu, who's also a partner of Schedulefly. Pop Menu is all about making your day easier and your sales bigger. They will simplify your marketing operations, bring in more guests, and capture customer data for personalized remarketing to keep them coming back. With one super simple to use platform that integrates with most point of sales like Toast and Square and a number of others, Pop Menu starts with a beautifully designed, easy to update, interactive menu that transforms the guest experience online. It includes a brand new website that's optimized for search engines like Google for no additional cost, automated digital marketing, online ordering and waitlisting, and you'll never miss another call with their AI answering solution that costs as little as 47 cents an hour. And there's just so much more in there. So check out the link in the show notes. Check out Pop Menu. My two cents is that all the mutual customers we have at Schedulefly that use Pop Menu that I've spoken to have said great product, great company, great results. So check them out, and check out this awesome episode with Natalie Grindstaff, Director of Restaurants, Crafted Hospitality, New York City. More episodes coming soon. See ya.
Hi, Will.
What's up?
How are you?
I'm good, Natalie. How you doing?
Good. I'm sorry to be late. I texted Greg. I'm not sure if he was able to text you, but
no worries. All good.
How's everything?
We're doing like a rapid fire Crafted Hospitality podcast day.
I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for taking the time to do this.
Yeah, absolutely.
So would do me a favor and just to introduce yourself real quick.
Sure. I am Natalie Grindstaff, and I am the Director of Restaurants for Crafted Hospitality.
And you have been in the business, hospitality business for a while. And if I read correctly, it seems like it was wine that kind of got you.
Indeed. Yes. So I was, sorry, I'm trying to find a little bit of a quieter spot if I can. So yes, I have always been in wine, and well, not always, but for many, many years have been in wine. I started my career in management. And then I came to live in New York in 2009. And I just saw that like wine was where it was cool in restaurants, you know, like I had a friend, she was a sommelier, and I got really inspired to kind of start down that path by watching her. It was just one of those things where like, I was like, man, the sommeliers are always having fun. Like people like to see them table side, they come over, they're like impressed with your knowledge. And you know, I was at the time in management, and I got to go to the table when there was like a problem, you know, it was like, something is wrong, send the manager over. And I kind of discovered that like, it was so much cooler to be the sommelier because everyone was like, oh, like, and then you were like someone's best friend and you recommended a wine that they loved. And it was just like a really joyful way to be in restaurants for me. And I ended up kind of going down that path and then becoming a beverage director. And so now, although my title is director of restaurants, I still have the beverage programs kind of under my umbrella just because I was like unwilling to let go of the fun part of it for me.
But you're back in management.
I mean, yeah, I feel like I never can really totally get away from it. It's, you know, like leading other leaders is a real joy. It's a challenge, but it's a joy. And it's one of those things where, you know, you can help other people kind of like with their own creativity and their own path. And there's a lot of joy in that, I think. So, but yeah, I'm back in management. But I don't have to go to the table if there's a problem for the most part. So
I gotcha. No, you have different types of problems to deal with. I mean, leading other leaders is a challenging thing. You have a lot of smart, probably strong-willed people that are leaders, and then you know, leading those folks and getting them on the same page and helping understand things from their perspective. I mean, you probably have to push yourself and grow a little bit each day to keep excelling at what you do, I would guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think of it in a way. I mean, obviously, my job as a leader of leaders is not to tell them what to do. It's to help them find the best way to do what they're doing, right? So at the level of folks that, you know, are leading our restaurants, these are people who are career professionals who've been doing it for many years. And they're excellent at what they do. So they don't need me to be like, hey, you should do A, B, C, and D. And they may need me to be more like, hey, you know, what if we did it this way? Or have you thought about this? Or you have a lot on your plate. Like maybe we should move some of this over here. So sometimes it's a little bit more like dynamics between the managers in a way, I guess. But yeah, for sure. Like, I think the way that when I first became a leader and sort of like how my leadership has grown over the years has like changed tremendously. And it's definitely, it's funny when we like, you know, in our company, we really promote from within. So a lot of our leaders started as line level employees. And when someone's a green manager, you're like, hey man, it takes a lot of years to get good at this. It's not just like, I think people are always like, people have natural leadership abilities. And that may be true. But leadership is a skill. It's learned, you know, and you make mistakes and do it wrong and you say the wrong thing, you make the wrong choice. And then hopefully you do better the next time. So.
I feel like, a lot of leadership, really good leadership, does take time, because having great natural leadership skills for sure, but marrying that with learning to let go of your ego and understanding you're not the be all end all, you're not, you know, it's not your way or the highway. I mean, the great managers, great leaders, you nailed it. I mean, you're kind of walking hand in hand with folks, not, you know, necessarily leading from the front and they're just following you. And so much of that is just learning to go, okay, I make mistakes too. I've learned that myself. I mean, as a parent, like you get better at it every time.
Oh man, that's a real, I have a 4.5-year-old. So that is really a life lesson that I'm learning, is like, you know, man, do you make some mistakes when you have kids, for sure. You think you're going to be this one kind of way, and then it comes to reality and you're like, oh man, that was, who did I think I was? That is not true. I cannot do that.
I would never let my kid, like, I can't tell you how many times I said that before I had kids. And, you know, I mean, I've got three, my daughter's my oldest, she's 19 and 16 and 13 year old boys. And there's so many things I've done where I'm like, I would have bet $1 million. I would never let my kid do that or do this or what, you know,
110%. Yeah. And then you're like, well, here we are, and I need this done. So I'm going to be turning on that show. I'm going to be letting my child watch a tablet at the table in the dining room.
Here's the tablet.
Because, wow, you know, kids aren't like miracle sitter stillers immediately. So, like, everyone thinks it's just like some kind of, yeah. So I can't agree with that more, that sentiment more. And yeah, leading, I think leading at a higher level, and not that you're, not that I'm like the mom, but, you know, there is like an element of like, you care so much about seeing them succeed. But you also realize you can't do it for them, you know? So there's like that parallel as well, which I think is, you grow into that over time, you know?
You do, absolutely. Well, yes, that's exactly right. Letting you know, I love what you just said. You want so badly to see them succeed. And that's, y'all have a great culture there. I'm curious, you know, obviously that's what Tom has instilled and what he has fostered. What led you to Crafted? How did you find your way there?
I had taken a job where I was working as a sommelier. I was opening team for a restaurant with USHG. And I was one of the opening sommeliers at Marta. And it was a great team. It was really fun opening. My husband's a chef, and he was actually a sous chef on the same team. So we were working together, which we had worked together in the past and worked fine. But I had a friend who was like, hey, you know, there's this opportunity for a beverage director role. And I had been a beverage director, but not in New York. And so I was like, oh man, that sounds amazing. And I was like, well, you know, tell me a little bit about the job. And they were like, it's Craft restaurant, Tom Colicchio's restaurant. And I was like, oh my God, I'm not qualified for that. You know, and I just had that instant like fear, like, I don't think I can do that job, you know? And Tom was such a big name, and it was such a classic, like legendary New York restaurant. And I was like, man, that would be like a dream. And I remember coming and interviewing, and just being like, at the time I had seen this TED talk about like, oh my gosh, I'm forgetting her name, Amy, I'm forgetting her last name, but she did a TED talk about power posing and about kind of like, you know, it was this kind of thing where you would like stand like Wonder Woman, and it would like instill you with confidence. And I remember like power posing on 19th Street. So I was like, yeah, I got to get this job. Like, I got to get this job, you know?
Great.
I was like, I want this job so bad, and like kind of like willing it into existence. And I remember coming and like interviewing, and I got the second interview, and I was just so nervous. And, you know, to be honest, I didn't really know anything about the culture. I just knew that Tom was this really famous chef, and I knew that Kraft was a very well-respected restaurant. I hadn't even eaten there before, which is really weird for me, because I was always like one of those people that I would never have applied somewhere I hadn't eaten and didn't know a lot about. But I knew about the history of Kraft. I just hadn't been there myself. And I also knew, because my husband is a chef, he was like, oh, Tom is like a real deal. You know, he's not a TV chef in the sense of like, you know, nothing against like Rachel Ray or anybody like that, but my husband was like, he's like a really serious chef. And so when I ended up interviewing and getting offered the job, I was like so blown away, you know? And I just remember being like feeling so thrilled and excited. And then when I started working here, I was instantly kind of like, wow, this place really is like a family, you know. Kraft is my original role with the company was a beverage director of Kraft. And Kraft at that time, it was 2015. And Kraft was a 14-year-old restaurant. And we had people who had worked here since day one. You know, we had Fabrizio, who was on the bar team. And so I was going to be kind of like directly managing this guy who worked here for 14 years. And I was incredibly nervous. And I just remember everyone being so welcoming to me and just really making me feel like I was at home, you know, and they were thrilled to have me join. And I kind of learned from the inside out about how great the culture was. And, you know, I've now been here for, you know, I'm coming up on 10 years next year. And it has everything in the world to do with the culture, everything in the world. Who I work for is really been a guiding force in how I've made choices about what my career is. Obviously, that was a great job and I was so excited to have it. But if the culture hadn't been what it is here, I probably would have been off to the next great opportunity in 2 years, as I had before in my, you know, former jobs. I usually had been somewhere for a year, 2 years, 3 years. But staying somewhere for 10 years, it's because of the culture. It's because of the way we treat each other and the way that we, I love that there was opportunity, you know, and I was able to take a growth path and I was also able to give others a growth path. So that for me was huge.
You know, yeah, I think I would be, this is what I've come to admire just from what I've heard speaking to you and your colleagues about Tom's. I would feel skeptical, not that there's anything wrong with a celebrity chef. It's great. But I would think, okay, this person's probably off, like, you know, like they're not going to be involved in the day to day. I'm not going to ever really see them. It's, you know, and that's totally the opposite of what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting because, man, I mean, I've been interviewing people for this podcast for like a decade now. We've done like, we're approaching 500 episodes. And it took me a long time to really, truly realize this. But the common thread is I feel like there's so many ways to be successful in this business. There's like every time I'm like, oh, everybody does this thing, then somebody else is successful and they don't do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But in particular, this has been underscored the last few years, is culture. Do you have a culture of family and trust and growth and support and teamwork? And I mean, like a really true culture, like everybody talks about, our, you know, you got to have a good culture, but I mean, like where I see it, where it's really authentic, where it really is this, it's led by people who genuinely care about the well-being of the people that work there. That's it. Like that is the secret sauce, I think, in hospitality. And it's because you're employing a bunch of people who want to take care of others, who want to provide a meaningful experience. So if that's your, in your DNA, if that's how you're wired, and then you work for an organization that isn't giving you that fostering and that level of care, it ain't going to work.
You know,
but the great ones all over the country, everywhere I find great operations, great restaurant groups, great single look, whatever it is, it always comes down to the culture is great. And that culture is always the underpinnings of that culture, the foundation of that culture are love and trust and support and then autonomy to go and try and do and learn and, you know, and master what you're doing. But I find that to be, that's it. If I figured out one thing ever, all these,
I feel like you like wrote my like Maslow's pyramid of needs, basically, and what I look for in a job and what I look for in a career and who I'm going to work for. It's exactly those kinds of things. Like, I think when you hit the nail on the head, when you're expected to take care of others the way we are in hospitality, and like, we all know that there is a lot of joy in there. There's a lot of wonderful moments where someone is like, I got engaged here, or, oh my God, last time I came in, you recommended this bottle of wine and we loved it so much. And we just went and visited the winery, or, you know, whatever the case may be, like all these stories, like where you're making someone's evening special. And, you know, I hear sometimes it's like, we're not saving lives. And I'm like, no, we're not saving lives. We're enhancing lives. Like, we're literally creating joyful moments for people. And what is life without joy? And so then compounded with that, you have to take care of people in this way that can be very emotionally draining. And so if you are not working within a company that's also supporting and taking care of you, then that just leads to unhappiness. And I don't think it's a sustainable cycle. If you're being treated in a way that isn't respectful, you're not being seen as an individual or cared about or cared for, if you're being treated like you're replaceable, then you don't have it. What is your motivation to show that care to the guests, you know? And again, even if it's, you're the kind of person that it comes from within, you can only sustain that for so long without everyone else around you being in that same mindset. And, you know, we all talk a lot about Tom, but Tom knows the people that work in these restaurants. Like, of course he knows us, like the executive team. We work with him all the time. We talk to him all the time, but he knows our employees on the line level as well. And he is in touch with them, especially our guys who've been around for a long, long time, guys and gals. And it really, they matter to him when they're having problems. He cares, you know, and it's that he doesn't have to, you know, like, I mean, he should as a human, we all should, but Tom is at a level, he's on television, you know, he has like a, he has the restaurants obviously, but he has other ventures and things that he is involved with, but he genuinely cares about the people that work in all of his restaurants. And you know, I don't know. I don't know if everyone has the bandwidth to do that or doesn't, or maybe some people just like to put a layer between themselves because it's for whatever reason. But I just don't, you don't see that as much anymore, I think, when you get into the sort of hospitality groups that we're talking about. There's just a tends to be a little bit less, I don't know, care put in some ways, I guess. So I don't know. Yeah. Tom's a special dude. Like, I love working for him. I've, you know, again, put a decade of my life into this company almost. And it's because I have a lot of respect for the dude. Like, what he does is great. And I think our restaurants are awesome. And I'm proud to be a part of what we do. But making that culture, creating that culture is, I think, the center of it, truly.
It is a, yeah, it's some alchemy of just marrying together these, you know, the idea of just, well, like you said, I mean, it's just like building a family and you taking care. I mean, I look at hospitality as like, great hospitality is provided in the same way you would have your guests come into your home. Like,
yeah,
it's real. You care. It matters. You want them to be happy. You're attentive to their needs. You're mindful of what's going on. You care about the people. And that's, you know, to get people on your team that think of it that way is hard. And it's gotten harder from COVID. I mean, people left the industry. So it's,
oh my gosh. Yeah. You know, I mean, that was a real revelation, right? Like, even talking about how, like, do we get everything perfect? No, of course not. We don't at all. We make mistakes as well. But I think, you know, the way that we tried to handle COVID, which was, that was one of that rocked the industry to the core, you know? And I think there were some groups that I had heard, you know, that really, it was sort of like people were like, of course, I think at some point we all understood that pretty much everyone was going to be laid off, right? Like, restaurants were not open in New York. You couldn't operate, really. So the vast majority of like large restaurant groups were like, hey, we're laying everyone off, which I think a lot of people understood was just that was what had to happen. But, you know, we really tried to stay in touch with people. We tried to make sure people knew what was happening. We tried to keep people updated. And I know people who, friends of mine who worked for other groups where they kind of like heard nothing, you know? And getting through that period was obviously like nightmarish, but it really cemented for me that I was working for and with the right people. Because when we were coming back, I was on the phone calling Fabrizio, the bartender, and being like, hey, man, do you want to come back and work in, you know, PPE gear on the sidewalk in New York where like God knows how much money we're going to make and who's going to come and what it's going to be like. And Fabrizio was like the first person who came back and it was amazing, you know? So he was like day one employee of Kraft when we opened and he was the very first employee back after COVID. So it, like there's meaning there, you know, there's like,
100%.
That's not just a job. That person is not just an employee. So for me, you know, I like, as a like beverage person, you know, we're kind of like dreamy and we love the story. I think there has to be meaning in it for me. It can't just be like, oh, hey, we're putting food on the table and like making it nice for people. It's the people that make it special to work at Craft and to work at Temple Court and to work at Small Batch and Craft LA and all of our great spots, you know?
Do you, well, you mentioned the TED Talk. Do you watch TED Talks and read books and things like that to try to just continue to grow as a leader?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, it's funny. Amy Cuddy is the name of the woman who's did the it's like all kind of about like body language. It's a great, great, great TED Talk. I love her. I can't believe I forgot her name, but Amy Cuddy. I do, you know, it's funny. Like I was saying, my husband's a chef and he loves to watch like every culinary show that ever comes on ever. And I'm always like, oh, haven't you like had enough of work from work? You know, like, don't you want to like zone out and watch something like totally worthless? And he's like, no, I love this. I read a lot of wine stuff, obviously, still, because it's like such a subject that if you don't continually mine for new information, you know, or like keep your old information refreshed. When it comes to sort of like hospitality books, of course, I have read like Setting the Table and all of those kind of like very classics. I used to work at Babbo and I read Heat. Which I actually would totally go in for a reread of that book because it's just a great book and really well written. Heat, Bill Buford. It's all about like Babbo and like kind of the beginning and origin story. Yeah. It's like way before everything kind of went crazy. But a lot, I worked there for a year and a half and I read that book while I was working there. And a lot of the people who were in the book still worked there. So it had a kind of, you know, there was also that sense of like long-term family kind of culture there as well in some ways. But those are, you know, I don't listen to as many like hospitality podcasts as I probably should. Cause I know there's a lot of good ones out there. But yeah, you know, I also feel like most of our friends at this point in my life are somehow either in hospitality or hospitality adjacent in some way, or were in hospitality and have pursued something different at this juncture in their lives. But we have a lot of like friend talk, you know, we'll have friends over for dinner and generally it's someone who does something similar to what I do or my husband does. And so there's a lot of industry talk that way as well.
So your husband's a chef as well. So you've got this 4.5-year-old. Is it going to be a family business, you think, or?
I mean, I don't know. I think hospitality, I think certainly being in the culinary side of things, it has to come from within. You have to love it and want to do it to be a part of it. That's completely up to him. Whatever he wants to do, as long as he's happy, I'm happy. I think my husband would prefer that he doesn't go into cooking just because it's such a hard life. And until you become quite successful, it's kind of a grind. But, you know, I've loved being in hospitality. I flipped to the wine sales side for a year and it just like was very much not for me. Like I really missed working in hospitality. So even though my role now is a little bit different, you know, I'm not in the restaurants on the floor every single day. I don't really think I would wanna, I love being in this world, you know, I like being in the hospitality sector, even if, you know, my job isn't to necessarily be on the floor, like talking with guests every single day, but I do miss it the times that I do that, I still find it very like fun and rewarding and enjoyable. And I'm like, oh yeah, man, this is so good. You know? And I think Tom is very similar. You know, whenever he ends up doing an event, I think people are like, oh, is Tom going to like cook? And I'm like, yeah, man, Tom is going to cook. Like that is what he likes doing. So he shows up and he's like in the kitchen, you know? And I think people are sometimes surprised by that, but that's where he likes being. So I think we're all kind of like, love to fall into those same roles that we kind of started in, because that's where we feel, you always feel like it's I don't know. There's something familiar about it that feels great, you know?
Well, you said earlier that people will say, you know, hey, we're not saving lives. But you know what? In some ways you are. I mean, you're where people go when they have their life saved. I mean, you like to celebrate. Yeah. Where people go when they mourn. You're where people go when they, you know, are going to see. I mean, I was supposed to be up there. I was going to see, you know, my brother-in-law, like at one of your restaurants, because that, you know, like that, it's such an, I mean, I think a lot of people figured this out during COVID, that maybe people took this for granted before, but when your favorite restaurants all close down, you're like, where am I gonna it's gotta, you know, so they try to support them and whatever. But I think it's, you know, particularly the independent restaurants and the, you know, these small groups and family run businesses are, they're just an important part of our, they're a huge and important part of our, of any great community.
100%.
They're where culture grows and blooms. They're sort of the epicenter of culture. And whether that's, and you ask like, why is New York great? Or why is Charleston great? Or why is Atlanta great? Or why is LA great? I mean, wherever you like, pick a great town or a great city, it could be a small little town or a big city.
Yeah.
You start asking, why is it great? Then, you know, within a handful of reasons, it's going to be because they have great independent restaurants. And, you know,
I couldn't agree with that more.
They're just, that's where we come to, you know, and we need more of that, frankly. I mean, it's a little disconcerting that, you know, like you have this there in New York now where people aren't in the office as much and therefore mm-hmm. they're not coming together at restaurants during a busy lunch hour. And we're more, you know, we're a little bit more remote now and we're spending more mm-hmm. time on our, you look at what that does to culture and society. It's, you know, restaurants are like the one place we can all kind of be together. And it doesn't matter what walk of life you're from, whether you're a customer or an employee in a restaurant, mm-hmm. really. And there's not, that's rare. So it's, I would say that, sure, no, you're not saving lives like, you know, an ER doctor, but you're right. It's additive. You're adding a ton of value to people's lives and to the culture of the community that you're in.
I mean, I totally agree with you. Like it's funny. My husband and I were just on a trip to Vietnam. We got back about a week ago, which was amazing. And my husband, of course, was like, we're eating all the street food. And I was like, right, let's do it. And then we kind of realized that our mode of traveling is sort of like, go to a luxurious breakfast and then have a leisurely lunch and have wine and then go to dinner and drink a bottle of wine and have a cocktail. And, you know, it's kind of like we have this, our days sort of revolve around food. So then when you're eating street food, it takes about 15 minutes to do that. So then we had like 45 minutes of the day planned. And then the rest of the day, we're like, well, what do we do with ourselves? You know, like here we are on vacation and we can't have, you know, we're not having three luxurious 4-hour meals a day. You know, it was like, we didn't know what to do. We had to kind of rejigger the vacation. But, you know, I think that says a lot about where we find joy in life. And, you know, it's literally sitting across the table from each other in a nice restaurant and having a great time. And I think that we're hopefully not alone in that, you know, people see dining, I think, more as an event in and of itself than ever. And that I think is awesome. And again, something that is, we all missed out on during COVID. And God, like what a joy that was to like go out. Where was the first place that you ate after COVID? Like, where did you go out to eat for the very first time after COVID? Do you remember?
Oh yeah. And I think most people do because it was such a big deal. Like, get to go into a restaurant and sit down and have somebody come and take our order. Like that was an amazing,
like magic.
But you would never think that you would find that to be anything more than just something you always do. Kind of, you know, reminded us of how meaningful that is. And it's, I think that, the pendulum swung so far with, you know, we all got these phones and technology and you go places and everybody was just on there, you know, constantly. And I feel like people are starting to realize like, that's not healthy. Like, that's not a good thing.
Yeah. And
staying on that thing constantly is, you know, this, I mean, as a parent, you think about it and you're like, you know, it's just this constant dopamine hit. And then you start to like, let's do non-phone time. And then non-phone time, we're present. Right. And that's, and where we get that as a family of five is when we go out to eat. Like,
yeah. And it's even like, I mean, if you think about it, even if you're like watching a movie, you're watching it all together and like kind of having some level of action. But when you're on your phone, it is literally like 100% solo. Like you are just, it's just you and the phone.
You and the phone. Yeah.
And I couldn't agree with you more. I think there's like a need for that kind of thing in society. I mean, I have a friend who runs like a small restaurant in the East Village, and they have a rule that you have to put your phone in like a little box when you come in. Like you can't. So it's like just literally encouraging the art of conversation at the table and like, you know, reminding you like, hey, you came to dinner to like talk with a person, not look at your phone, which I think is like kind of militant, but also awesome.
Sometimes people need to that little extra nut, you know, like I bet people are there and they do that and they're like, that's weird. And then they're sitting there like, God, I'm so glad that we put our phone, like, how awesome is this?
Yeah. It just is, you know, life needs those. I think we all need those like little reminders of like, slow down and just don't like interact with humans again, you know? And I'm not at all anti-remote work. I think it's cool. I think it's great. I think it's like really helpful, especially to like parents and, you know, not that you can like parent completely while your child is running around and you're trying to work, but like, you know, I think there's a lot of advantages to it, but it's also, you know, I think you do lose that social piece of like, so like seeing someone in the office, you just don't have those kind of like immediate little like crossover moments. And I guess that maybe is one of the gifts of restaurants is you literally can't do it virtually. You got to go, you got to sit down, you got to smell the food, you got to eat it, you know, it's not going to like lend itself to a virtual reality experience. So.
That's right. Well, this has been so much fun. I've so enjoyed talking to you and I love,
same.
I thank you for taking the time. I love the passion and just authentic care about what you do. It comes across very naturally. So you're doing what you're meant to do. I can tell that.
Thank you, Will. It was great chatting with you.
Good to talk to you too. Thanks for the time. I appreciate it very much. And when I am able to get there in person, unfortunately not this time, but I will come see y'all. I've really enjoyed
love it.
Thank you.
Awesome. All right, cool. Thank talk you. To you soon.
See you.
Bye.